Ladies and gentlemen, our greatest, our most urgent need today is for a public understanding of the communist conspiracy. Too few Americans are now aware that they are living in the very shadow of slavery and death, that they are living under the eyes of secret conspirators who are confident that they will, within the next 3 or 4 years, take open control and possession of the United States in exactly the same way and by exactly the same methods that they have used to enslave all of the many nations, that they have conquered in their triumphal sweep over the world, from the capture of Russia in 1918 to the capture of Cuba in 1959. And those methods are clandestine penetration and internal subversion. In this year, 1960, the year which Miss Bella Dodd, who was once a ranking member of the conspiracy, calls the crucial and decisive year for the communist conquest of our nation, there are no domestic political issues. There is only one question to be decided at the polls: the survival of the United States. There is only one issue by which every candidate must be judged: his attitude toward the communist conspiracy of treason. I shall not take your time, ladies and gentlemen, to outline again what is known of the dark history of the world's greatest criminal organization and of its unremitting work and constant growth in the United States since that black day in 1872, when the headquarters of the international conspiracy were openly and officially transferred to New York City. The present status of the communist conspiracy in the United States is a matter of public knowledge. On March 3, 1958, that great and undaunted American, Congressman Francis E. Walter, chairman of the House Committee on Un-American Activities, published a report stating that, I quote, "The Kremlin has succeeded in enlisting, at a conservative estimate, more than 1 million Americans. There are at this moment the equivalent of some 20 combat divisions of enemy troops on American soil." I end the quotation. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, you are now living in a country that has been partly occupied. And unless the American people at once make a desperate effort to save themselves, they will, I think, within 3 or 4 years, find themselves in the position of the Hungarians when they made their frantic and hopeless effort to regain their freedom in 1956. Let's state the facts a little differently. Every year, the publisher of one of our most distinguished and courageous periodicals, American Opinion, asks the foremost experts on communism, experts living in the United States, Europe, Asia, and Australia, to make the most accurate estimate possible of the progress of the communist conquest of the world. The results are published each July under the title The Scoreboard. Every effort is made to avoid guesses or possible exaggeration, and the printed scores, therefore, represent the committee's united and minimum estimate. How conservative these estimates are is, I think, proved by the fact that where recent events have provided a check on the estimates, they were, in each instance, found to be too low. The recent communist takeovers in Iraq and Cuba, for example, show that in both cases, American Opinion had in the preceding year been too optimistic, had underestimated the strength of the communist conspiracy in those countries. And I ask you to bear in mind this record of underestimates when you note that American Opinion's scoreboard for July 1959 shows that the communist control, quote, "over everything of political or economic importance done in or by the United States," was between 30% and 50% of totality, having increased by 10% since July 1958. And I very much fear that the new scoreboard this coming July will have to record a similar increase. In the United States, the greater part of the communist conspiracy has always been secret and underground. Since 1907, it has had a visible segment, which was called the IWW until 1919, when it was reorganized as the official Communist Party, headed in both instances by a criminal named William Z. Foster, who was the friend and protege of Felix Frankfurter, an immigrant who is now one of the most sinister figures in our Supreme Court. This official party, which has probably never had more than 90,000 card-carrying members at any one time, has served on the one hand as a recruiting and testing agency to enlist talented conspirators who, after they had proven their worth and ability, could quietly be transferred to one or another division of the underground. And it has served on the other hand as a shield to hide and facilitate the work of the other conspirators who pose as liberal intellectuals and who urge the American people to save themselves from communism at home by reforming their legal and economic system along communist lines, and to save the world from communism by taxing themselves to finance communist governments abroad. The official party, which currently pretends to be even smaller than it is, has never been more than a small segment of the conspiracy. It is, as the communists themselves boast, merely the visible part, the periscope of the submarine. The submerged and invisible body of that submarine, the deadly bulk of the conspiracy, consists of criminals who all vociferously deny that they are communists. They are liberals, or progressives, or reformers, or even moderates. Many are loud-mouthed intellectuals who impudently ask you to believe that the slavish fidelity with which they follow every shift and twist of propaganda from Moscow is somehow a proof of the transcendent purity of their hearts and the vigor of their mighty minds. Many, a little more subtly, labor in their pulpits or their university chairs to inculcate, under the guise of the social gospel or economic democracy or scientific humanism or progressive education, debasing superstitions designed to poison the minds of Americans and to paralyze their will to resist. And most secret of all, there are the conspirators who in the communist jargon are called sleepers. Their function is to avoid all suspicion of complicity so that they may more easily and quickly be boosted into positions of power and influence from which they can protect and advance their more active accomplices. This secret apparatus has always employed two distinct but complementary techniques, infiltration and agitation. From the very beginning of its invasion of the United States, the conspiracy must have assigned to its most talented members the task of penetrating existing American organizations and institutions. At first, the process of infiltration called for all the cautions and patience that we proverbially associate with headhunters and other less sophisticated savages. But when one conspirator succeeded in crawling into a given organization, he could sooner or later stealthily open the way for one comrade, and then with his help for another. We all know that in almost any organization that functions along democratic lines, even a tiny minority, if disciplined to work ruthlessly and secretly in unison, can, so long as it remains unrecognized by the majority, exert at least a negative control over the whole organization, and may eventually be able to take it over entirely. If you bear this fact in mind, you will cease to marvel at what the communists have accomplished by persistent infiltration since 1872. Agitation is the function of communist fronts. The first front that we can positively identify was created in 1907 by the Reverend Dr. Harry F. Ward, then a Methodist minister in Evanston, Illinois, later a professor in the Union Theological Seminary in New York City, and one of the founders of the so-called National Council of Churches that is currently in the news for the effrontery of its attempt to conceal the subversive activities of many of its officers and directors. Dr. Ward's Methodist Foundation for Social Service was but the first of the thousands of organizations that the communist underground has created and is daily creating to further its criminal design. There is a bewildering variety of such fronts, many of them seemingly innocuous or completely unrelated to political action. But all of the innumerable communist fronts have one thing in common. They simulate a charitable or altruistic interest in human welfare, pretend that they are crusading for some social good, and if they are not mere rackets to collect money for subversion, they all sooner or later find that that social good must be implemented by hectoring or coercing Americans into surrender of some part of their constitutional rights. These fronts serve primarily as a means of establishing and maintaining control over a mass, a large mass of dupes. Well-meaning and sometimes intelligent people who never even guess who is doing their thinking for them and never suspect that they are being deployed as skirmishers to cover a communist advance. With such organization and such tactics, the international conspiracy has penetrated every segment of American life and has attained effective control of many of the most strategic sectors. That is obvious from the information scattered in many sources, including the confessions of repentant communists and the reports issued by congressional committees. But let me remind you that all the investigations by the House and Senate committees have been fragmentary and have involved only minor members of the conspiracy. Even the late Senator Joseph McCarthy operated for the most part on the periphery of that conspiracy. And you will remember that when he opened a line of investigation which was evidently leading to a nest of traitors in the Pentagon, the forces of international communism, utilizing their control of the press, the radio, and television, struck down that great American patriot on what was the darkest day in American history since Valley Forge. There has been no searching investigation of communism in the United States. You will perhaps remember that Judge Robert Morris, who was chief counsel of the Internal Security Subcommittee of the Senate, stated in a radio broadcast 2 years ago that no congressional investigation of communism had ever gone very far in penetrating the inner structure of the conspiracy. Because whenever a committee seemed likely to follow the trail of major conspirators, its work was stopped by irresistible pressures. Ladies and gentlemen, it is your duty as Americans to create an irresistible pressure on the American side and to force the full and searching investigations that can alone expose our hidden enemies. And even more than that, if you want to survive, if you want to live in any condition in which life will be sweet to you, you must learn to recognize the communist agents and tools at work in your own community, your own churches, your own clubs, and your own schools. It is later than you think, but it is not yet too late. But it may be too late next year if you refused to use now what may be the last chance that God will give you.